do you do that in front of 1,000 people with some only a few feet away from you? Seriously, it changed my life. Thank you.
Surround yourself with good people, and I mean, just like I said, you know, I get paid to do this job where I dress up in the evening and shout at people. It's kind of incredible, and that's sort of like being working with the people I work with on that, and just having fun and sort of trying to make people. I don't know, having an audience. I've been showing off since I was a kid. What can I tell you? And, you know, that's, I'm still doing it. Somehow I'm making a living now.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to the James Bond Complex podcast, the show where we discuss, rejoice, and analyze with a finely toothed comb the entire James Bond phenomenon in all its shapes and forms, from Fleming to the films, and of course, everything in between. Well, that was a voice, and it didn't sound like Matthew tonight. But it is not a guest, it is a co-host, someone I haven't done a one-on-one show with in quite some time. Jason, how are you doing, Jason?
Doing well, Edgar. Still lounging around in New York City, enjoying the Halloween weekend.
Sounds expensive.
I've been making it as budget-friendly as budget reasonable as possible. Not budget-friendly.
You are pretty good at that. I have this funny feeling that even though No Time to Die came out over a year ago and we're on the cusp of the search for the 007th actor to play James Bond, it feels like Daniel Craig is always in our lives. There's always something Daniel Craig-related happening that gets us giddy and sometimes even lets us awards us the opportunity of seeing him in person, in the sense that we breathe the same air as him. Jason, you went to something this weekend, this Halloween weekend in New York. Tell us about why were you in Manhattan?
So the reason why I'm in the Big Apple is as part of the Montclair Film Festival, which is, headed by Stephen Colbert of the late night show Colbert Show. Stephen Colbert is the president of the Montclair Film Festival. And this year, one of the films that premiered during the film fest, or maybe not premiered, but one of the films that had its run during the film festival was the new Knives Out Glass Onion film, which I still have not seen, by the way. Mm-hmm. And to conclude the film festival, Stephen Colbert hosted Daniel Craig for a Q&A forum, and all the money that was raised went to the charities across the Newark, New Jersey area. And by the way, the reason why Stephen Colbert is the head of this film festival is because Colbert himself is from New Jersey.
Interesting. Was the venue itself in New Jersey or was it in New York?
Oh, so the venue was in New Jersey. Good question. But like, you know, and for our dear listeners who aren't, you know, like geographically familiar, you could get to New Jersey and New York City or Manhattan, Upper West Side, Upper East Side, whatever, by various public transits. And, you know, it's about an hour one way, you know, by public transit or an hour by car because of all the traffic.
Yes, the bloody traffic. Having seen some of the photos on Facebook and Instagram, it seemed like a pretty big event. It sounded like a lot of people were there. What was the venue like? What was the place like?
So it was like a very huge concert hall, and there are people from all walks across life, you know, Bond fans, people who attend the film festival. And I was fortunate to have met or have met many of the Bond community members who were within the areas. Me and Luke Taggart and Simon Simon Rusgar of What's Daniel's Wearing. We were some of the many folks who flew in out of state for this event because we're just that passionate of Bond fans. But I mean, I'm not saying if you didn't attend this event, you're not a Bond fan.
We're not saying that.
But we were fortunate to have attended this event. And there are many Bond fans who I haven't seen in a very long time, such as Joe. I haven't seen Joe Darlington since Operation Skyfall in Toronto in February 2020. Whereas, you know, I saw Kyle a few months ago in March for Macbeth, and and that's when I also saw Spezza then, and this was my first time seeing Zuritsky in person since No Time to Die premiere, and I never met Mike Pekowski. Sorry if I'm giving your last name. Cultures of Bond. I haven't seen him in forever. And as David always emphasizes, the community and the camaraderie aspect of Bonding, pun intended. This event was truly that. And there are a lot of Bond fans who I haven't seen in a long time. But this event, long story short, it was the people that made it great. Mm. And just like the time when I met you and Matthew over 5 years ago at the George Lazenby event, a young fellow named Robbie Young sat next to me. He's a student at Montclair Film Festival, and he was like, "Hey, I'm a James Bond fan," and I was like, "This is the reason why I'm here." And I was like, "Oh yeah, of course I am too." And then I showed him my travel and No Time That premiere photos, and he was like, "That's sick." And then afterwards, I introduced him to David Zuritsky, Kyle, and the entire Bond community, and you know, like, and he was truly amazing. And this is what, and he said the exact same thing that you said to me when we first met is that I didn't realize that there was a full world of people just like I can geek over about Bond. And he said, it's like seeing like 12 of me. And that's what you said to me at the time the first time in 2017.
I don't remember saying that, but I'll take your word for it. Yeah, it is one of those interesting experiences because to quote Zuritsky, I believe he said this on Mike insofar as in his YouTube videos. It's sort of the invisible hobby. I mean, you know a Star Wars fan because they're wearing Star Wars t-shirt or they'll have, some memorabilia in their man cave or what have you. Whereas with James Bond, it's a little bit more difficult to tell. I mean, you can put on a nice three-piece suit. It doesn't mean the person's a James Bond fan. So it very much is an invisible hobby, an invisible fandom. So finding those people, as we did over 5 years ago, and as you did Friday night with, what is the gentleman's name again?
Robbie Young. And I added him on both our Instagram page, and he followed
Excellent.
Us back.
Excellent. Very nice. Very nice. So pleasure to sort of meet you via Jason Kim via this Zoom conference. But yeah, no, it's nice. We got another one. We found another one.
One of the persons who, you know, had the fortune of asking Daniel Craig a question during the Q&A, she was a female. She was also one of the people who attended the No Time to Die premiere. I was like, yes, I can relate to someone.
Kindred spirit.
But then the format was, I want to say similar, but, you know, it was kind of set up in the same way as the evening with Sir Roger Moore, where in the fact that it was focused on Daniel's entire life instead of just Bond or a particular movie. But however, because this was the Montclair Film Festival that was trying to promote Knives Out, Glass Onion, it was definitely more focused towards that than James Bond for sure, because No Time That was quote unquote so last year.
Did you get a sense that a lot of people, and this might be a tricky one, but did you have a sense that many people in attendance had seen Glass Onion? Had it played yet?
Oh, no. I think because Stephen Colbert obviously saw, because he's like one of the panel judges for the film festival. And then he's like, hey, who here attended the festival and saw Knives Out? And I'm going to guess that maybe 20 people said, woo-hoo.
Okay.
But then, so you could tell it was not a very well-watched movie, but as a result of this form, they're trying to promote it because they knew majority, 96% of the people in that audience did not watch it. And one of the and all the reviews have been stellar, and we'll get to our reviews when we get there. But Daniel Craig complained that, and this is a good complaint, that when the movie premiered at both the Toronto Film Festival and the Montclair Film Festival, Rian Johnson wrote the jokes so well that, I mean, because it's a hilarious movie if you see the first one, but Rian Johnson wrote the jokes so well that when the audiences were laughing at that the joke of the moment, the laughters were so loud that people missed out the joke that came up immediately after.
Were there any, I assume they talked James Bond at least a little bit.
Yes.
Okay. Was there any James Bond information revealed during this talk that we had never heard before? Was there anything that made you go, oh, really? I didn't know that's what happened behind the scenes or what have you?
So the question came up during Colbert. At least I'm not sure about the other Bond connoisseurs. I did not know this information, but you know, Daniel Craig gave an interview for the Hollywood Reporter after No Time to Die about how he got the role of James Bond, because like how his agent / acting coach Mary, I forget the last name, but she had passed away. So Daniel Craig was one of the pallbearers, and then that acting coach happened to be friends with Barbara Broccoli, and Barbara Broccoli was like, hi. And then when they introduced each other, Barbara was like, hey, I want you to come in. Can you come in for an audition? I know you're an actor. And he's like, yeah, sure, why not? Because, you know, Daniel was, you know, a working actor, but not a household name by any means. Like,
right.
I mean, he was working enough to pay bills, but he was not a Hollywood star, you know, like the star icon,
right,
whatever. And then I knew that portion of the story, because like that was emphasized during the several interviews during the No Time to Die, you know, like press conferences all last year. But the one aspect I didn't realize was Daniel went in thinking he was gonna be cast as a side bad guy or a background. He thought he was gonna be quote unquote casted as a background thug or a henchman at best. So like henchman would have been the most screen time role, but a background thug is what he was expecting. And then he went into the Eon's office, and they're like, no, we want you to play James Bond. he told us, you guys got the wrong person. I'm out of here.
5 movies later and billions of dollars later, here we are. Oh, that's interesting. I had never heard that either. New to me, new to you and new to me. Maybe some listeners have heard that one before, but that's news to me. Interesting. A background heavy. Come on, Daniel. A background heavy? Let's go. Let's go.
And speaking of villain, because he was wearing a gray Brunello Cucinelli suit, which has been confirmed by all the Bond fans who are more sartorially expert knowledgeable than I am. From my angle, because I was sitting 10th row on the orchestra, so I had a pretty good view, but like the angle, because like he was never facing the audience most of the time. He was turning his head, talking to Colbert, because it was because it was a Q&A.
Yeah, it looked like it was set up that it was it's almost as if there was no audience and two chairs were facing each other, sort of a thing. Yeah.
And then Colbert was feeding Daniel as much cocktails as possible. He was drinking like ginger and vodka, ginger and Coke. No vodka martinis, but and the reason why I bring that up is because the angle that I kept seeing Daniel at throughout the entire interview, he looked more like Robert Shaw's Red Grant than James Bond.
What was revealed for you anyways? What was revealed in this Q&A that maybe people should know? A two-part question. What can you extrapolate from that Q&A about Daniel Craig, the actor, that people should know? And what would you extrapolate that about Daniel Craig, the person, that people should know?
Well, that's a very good question. As an actor, he is extremely well-trained. He's a consummate professional, as he was in this interview as well. And you could say, and I think this could answer both as a person and as an actor, you could tell that as Bond, he is just completely done. Like he's the most.
Elaborate on that, please. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Because like obviously during the Q&A forum, I did not get a question. My question answered. My question was, what was some of your favorite locations you filmed around the world? And during the Q&A, you know, the people with the mics went to various people and said, what's your question? And then
are you going to do another Bond?
and then they would use their discernment to see who would get who got to address the question. And some of it was time limited, of course. And at all the Bond questions, he just really didn't feel like answering at all.
Oh,
like,
really? I mean,
yeah. Like they're like, do you have someone asked that, you know, the obvious question, like, do you have any input or thoughts on who should be the next James Bond?
Oh, get out of here. Stop it.
Daniel's like, I'm done. He's like, no, that's not my decision. That's called ask Barbara. And you know, what else?
Ask Barbara.
I think the only question, the only Bond question in which he answered with like fun or favorably, I guess, was when a kid, when some a younger fan asked him, "What is your favorite James Bond movie that's not your Bond movie?" And he usually says From Russia with Love, but this time he said Goldfinger at the moment, at the heat of the moment.
Interesting.
Which is not a bad choice by any means, but usually he'll go between most people will always go between From Russia with Love and Goldfinger. And ironically, he filmed at Stoke Park for Layer Cake right before he became James Bond.
He did indeed. I believe that's where the movie ends. That's where his character meets an inglorious ending. Interesting. And I think you hinted at what would have been your question. Your question would have been, what were your favorite, you being Daniel Craig, what were your favorite locations to shoot at?
Yeah, just across this film, because outside of James Bond, obviously, I heard the island. I did not see Glass Onion by any means, but people have praised that the set work in Greece for Glass Onion was beautiful. And Budapest is one of my favorite films ever. And Munich, he filmed Steven Spielberg's Munich in Budapest, which is also another glorious city as well too.
Yeah.
To further elaborate your question, what did we learn about Daniel as a person? We actually, just like the evening with Sir Roger Moore, we actually got to know a lot more about Daniel as a person, like about his upbringing and how he got into acting in the first place as well. And he talked about, living in Liverpool, and he knew that most people in America wouldn't know where Liverpool was. So he was describing where it was and how it was, especially in the 80s, because of the economic turmoil that Northeast England had. He talked about his family situation at the time. And he was from a neighborhood in Liverpool. I can't pronounce the name of it because Daniel gave a very British pronunciation, like Hoyling Lake or something like that. Hoyling Lake. That's another thing we didn't learn as a person, is he said how his mother actually got accepted to RADA, the Royal Academy Drama Arts, and she wanted to become an actress, but her family was poor, so she couldn't attend. And then she, inspired Daniel to do a lot of things and, to pursue his dreams, and how he, thought about being a rugby player at one point and how he played rugby. And
interesting.
So this film was very focused on Daniel Craig, the person, than, Benoit Blanc, Joe Bang, James Bond, per se.
I guess it's a little bit difficult to talk about a movie that nobody in the audience has seen yet. I mean, they're not going to spend an hour and a half talking about Glass Onion when the movie's not out yet and has been exclusive to just one or two film festivals at the moment. So I understand there's marketing that needs to be done and whatnot. What was your favorite answer, irrespective of what the question was, or what was your favorite question? What was the moment glad I got to hear that?
The Goldfinger answer was pretty, I like that one. But then a woman asked, because there was also a lot of talk about Macbeth, playing Macbeth on Broadway, because that had just happened a few months ago.
Yeah.
And then the woman asked something, I had the clip by the way, the woman asked something in regards of you died a very violent death in Macbeth and you really captivated the audience. How do you do that in front of 1,000 people day in, day out, twice a show, two shows a day? Yep. And then he says, I try to have fun with, and this was the answer he gave for a lot of questions about working on film, whether it was Bond or Macbeth, is that he always tries to build a good camaraderie with his castmates, try to have fun. And he ended and he gave a very a good English quip, saying I spent my entire childhood, showing myself off, and now I'm somehow making a living out of it.
Did Rachel Weisz send her love to Stephen Colbert this time?
She was, so I did not see her, but she was actually actually in attendance, and she was only sitting three rows ahead of David, and then David sent us photos. And Luke Taggart also got a quick shot of her, and Luke Taggart's like, Rachel Weisz is sexy as hell. And she really is gorgeous. She wore a very beautiful dress from the pictures that I saw.
Oh, she seems like a delightful person. And she's a very good actress, too.
Oh, and then they did talk quite a lot about Rachel Weisz, because, like, you know, they're talking about, you know, their personal lives. And most people didn't know that Daniel Craig was married to Rachel Weisz. And Daniel says, like, you know, Rachel is a much talented actress than I am. And then they said that even that despite both of them having a lot of acclaim, they keep their professional lives very separate from each other. She'll be like, because like they'll be like, oh, honey, I'm going to London and Matera to film James Bond. And then she'll be like, yeah, sure, that's fine. And then he'll come back and she'll be like, oh, I'm going to Bosnia and film this or whatever. I mean, I'm not a married person by any means, but like any other married couples, they tend to keep their workspace away from their homes. Even though they then meet on the movie Glass House or something like that.
Yeah, something like a terrible like movie. I've never seen it, actually. It's a ghost story, right? What Blofeld says is he's beating up on Bond Inspector out of horror, beauty. So there you go. A terrible film, but it led to a great marriage. What's your sense about the relationship between Stephen Colbert and Daniel Craig? Because having seen them once or twice on Colbert's show, they seem pretty chummy. What was it like seeing them in person, live, no edits for 90 minutes?
So this was really interesting. So like there was a, because like, you know, they were trying to crack jokes, which were very good jokes. And, you know, I kept a good laughter for the entire 2 hours. And there were watching this interview / forum, you could really tell the great differences between American and British culture.
Like, elaborate on that.
So like Daniel was like the way Daniel, you know, would pronounce where he's from, like Hoyling Lake or something. And Colbert's like, oh, what is that? And, you know, like, and I forget, like, there's a word for, and they're like, and then another example is, you know, like, Daniel's like, oh, you know, when I was auditioning, I went to go out and smoke a fag. And then Colbert had to
elaborate. Does he really say that? Non-ironically, he says that.
He says, I had to go out and smoke a fag. And then Daniel's like, oh yeah, that's not appropriate here. He had to elaborate that in Britain, that's what cigarettes are called, and you know, stuff like that. And there are a lot of moments like that, and how, like, you know, like living in Liverpool, Daniel said something to the words of how everyone's parents always bragged about that their parents went to school with one of the Beatles, including George Best.
Right.
And then Daniel elaborate, my dad actually did go to school with George Best. And he talked, because he's from Liverpool, he talked about how much he loves Liverpool FC. Mm-hmm. Screw you, YNWA fans.
Right.
He professed his love for both Steven Gerrard and Mo Salah, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Two very exceptional, probably one of the greatest players the history of soccer have ever seen in either of those two men.
Speaking of Daniel Craig being a busy person, were there any little tidbits dropped about what we might expect other than the obvious Glass Onion, which is, even at the time this episode is released, I mean, we are on the cusp of, we're weeks away from Glass Onion.
Yeah, he really didn't talk much about what he has ahead, but knowing that he splits his time between New York and London, he'll continue to do probably Broadway plays like every other year, which he has done, because he did Othello, which was produced by Eon, but back then too, in 2016, right after Spectre.
I don't remember, but he
did The Steady Rain in 2009, right after Quantum of Solace with Hugh Jackman.
That was
his first time doing Broadway, and then he did a play with Rachel Weisz as well too, but I forget when that was, but I remember he did Othello like 2016 or 2017. He did Macbeth this year, and then, you know, he'll continue to do plays. And then this was one of the two really good questions that were asked, were first was, if you could pick any player past or present to join Liverpool FC team right now, who would you pick? And then he said, no, Mo Salah is just as good. I don't need any He just said Mosal is good enough.
Right. Such a homer. I want, this has less to do with the evening, although it is directly related to Daniel Craig. You're one of the few people I know personally who has seen Daniel Craig in many, many movies, but who has also seen him live in theater on stage. Are there any sort of performance tics or performance details that you notice about Daniel Craig that you prefer in one or the other, or maybe something you saw on stage that was like, wow, you know, had I not seen this play, I would never have known that Daniel Craig is like that as an actor.
Not so much like his performance, because I believe, ironically, Daniel is the actor that, oh, the six Bonds, living or dead, unfortunately, that I've met the most in person, because like I met Dan, this was my fifth time meeting Daniel Craig over all my life, and not so much in his performance as an actor or on stage, whether it's film or stage, but I really pay attention to the way Daniel Craig delivers his interviews, and I will say that he's by no means a showman by any means, because like he does tend to like pick his words very carefully, as well as even when he doesn't, he tends to, or even when he does pick his words carefully, he tends to stutter still, or like, you know, try to think about his acting. Because like he always says he hates or dreads the 2005 introduction to being James Bond interview that he did on the Thames River and St. Catherine's Docks. I love that interview. I really love that interview, because like, I mean, I loved it then. I still watch it now, and you know, just to see like, just to like kind of like compare it to what happened in this entire tenure. And you know, he really like, you know, thinks about what he says and like stutters, and it just shows like a lot of authenticity on his part.
Did anybody ask what his favorite, I was about to say what his favorite movie is, not like of a movie he's seen, but what his favorite, the movie he's played in. Did anybody ask what his favorite movie is?
I'm glad you asked that before I mentioned that. And someone in the audience did say that, and spoiler alert or disappointment alert for our Bond fans,
it's not a James Bond movie.
He said Benoit Blanc is his favorite character that he's ever played.
Interesting. Well, I guess maybe because I'm sure he elaborated on that. Did he say something along the lines of it's a character that he got to co-create along with Ryan Johnson? There was like nothing. It was just on the page. And like, whereas, you know, when you're hired to play James Bond, I'm sure it's a great honor, but you know, five other actors had played the part, and it's not like it's a new character or anything like that. Whereas Benoit Blanc is fresh.
He really did, you know, elaborate on that, or kind of implied that that was one of the key aspects, because he said like Ryan, there's a lot of talk of praising of Ryan Johnson's, Star Wars Last Jedi quality aside, like. Ryan Johnson is he's a very good creative director in all his other movies that he's done, like Brothers Bloom, which he did with Rachel Weisz, or Looper with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and whatnot, and obviously Two Knives Out movie. And he just says like Ryan is just like an extremely cerebral director, and he would talk with Ryan and say, hey, how do you think about this joke? And then they'll be like, oh no, let's try this angle and whatnot, and it would just be a long process. And I think that's one of the reasons why he emphasized, like, why he liked Benoit Blanc. And also, unlike Bond, he can film all his entire Benoit Blanc scenes in like 6-7 weeks, and he's done. And it's not like he has to be in shape to play Benoit Blanc. But he said that he does spend like a week preparing the acts, and you know, before he shoots.
What's interesting about the Benoit Blanc, I'll reword that. What is potentially interesting about the Benoit Blanc character is that, unlike James Bond, where he obviously has to be in tip-top shape or had to be in tip-top shape for all five films, that's not necessarily the case for Benoit Blanc. So I'm wondering if, you know, God knows how many of these Knives Out, Glass Onion sequels they pull off, but let's say they do 5, 6, 7 of them, and they go over the course of the next 20 years, we're going to see Benoit Blanc in probably vastly different shapes as when compared to the first film, which was just a few years ago. And that could be interesting.
Yeah. Just to bring it back to Bond, and when your question about like, well, how is Daniel as an actor? So I think he also, even though he collaborated, you know, with Rian Johnson behind the scenes on the script or how to get into the character, he really, really emphasized that as an actor, he always wants a complete script, you know, like given to him before shooting the role. And then, because I've never been an actor, so but I've heard you know, tidbits about like how like in some movies that most actors are only given the script for their roles, but not the entire movie. But Rian Johnson always gave the entire script to everybody, I haven't seen the movie, but apparently Glass Onion has a lot of cameos. Famous actors. I don't know who they are, by the way, but even the people who do have the famous cameo scenes, they were given the entire script. And Daniel really
Go ahead, Jason.
The reason why I bring this up is because, like he said, when Barbara asked him to come to the audition, you know, to play James Bond, he's like, "Hey, can I see a script?" And Barbara said, "We don't have one." And he's like, "Yeah, fine, thanks." And at least, and then eventually, Barbara called him back several months later, or half a year later, whatever it was. And he's like, "Hey, we finally got the Casino Royale script. Do you want to read it?" And then he's like, and then he always, this is something he's always said, and he said it here again, is that, I went into the room thinking I was going to hate it, and you know, say, thanks for considering, but no, I'm not interested. But he said he was really glued to the Casino Royale script, and and that's why he, you know, that was the key reason why he accepted the role.
Interesting. I mean, it sounds like it was a wonderful evening. And speaking of that evening, I know you alluded to a little bit of the people from the Bond fan community you met up. But how was the after? Was there an after party? What'd you guys do? Where'd you guys go?
I introduced Robbie Young to the other Bond fans, and then we took a lot of good photos, and you know, individuals and whatnot. And afterwards, we went to a Spanish tapas bar. We had drinks and.
Nice.
Shared our moments, you know, shared the watches that we were wearing.
I saw that picture, I think. What were you wearing? Were you wearing your Hamilton?
Yeah, I'm wearing my Hamilton that I'm wearing right now.
Right.
The GMT.
Are the people in the fan community asking, why do you keep talking about Hamilton?
No, not really. They know. I do emphasize why I like Hamilton's a lot. And then they say, fair enough. And. To borrow a word from Spectre, this is a story I told David, is I was in a meeting in Scotland recently and his name came up, to quote from Spectre.
There you go.
And the reason how that came up was at the time I flown from Matera from Matera trip to Scotland to visit my friend. And then my friend was telling her coworkers about how much of a Bond fan I am, because I had just come from Terra. I had gone to the premiere last year, and you know, all that jazz. And one of her coworkers asked me, "Hey, then you must know the Bond experience." And that I was kind of hesitant because I had to think about it. I was like, "Oh, you mean David? Yeah, I know David." And I showed a picture of a very bad picture that I have with me and David. Now I have a better. But as a result of this evening, I have a better picture with David. So thank you, David.
There you go. You can market that. It is one of those things. I mean, I think we're wrapping up here, but it is one of those things where I do think of David Zaritsky first, the Bond experience second. You know, I think of Matt Spazer first, Suits Bond second. I think of Joe Darlington first, being James Bond second. Like sometimes I barely remember what the heck their platform names are. I know them as people. Well, sort of know them as people. I don't know them that well, but I've met them, so I sort of have voices and personalities, and handshakings have been had. And Luke Taggart is one of those ones that. I mean, by the way, God knows if he even listens to this show, but obviously, congratulations on what's coming up. But Luke Taggart is one of those ones who I never got to meet. I feel like he sort of carved his little. A place in the fan community sort of during the pandemic or on the cusp of the pandemic.
During the pandemic, I was kind of the one who really pushed them to do it.
Yeah, but I've listened to that show, Blunt Instruments, quite a few times, him and Lorenzo, and I've I think he had a YouTube channel for a little while too, Luke. And
right now his YouTube channel is blossoming more than their podcast though.
But he's one of the, as well as Lorenzo, who sounds like a very pleasant fellow, but I find Luke is, never met him. I don't think I've ever DM'd him. I don't think. If I do, forgive me, I don't remember. But just listening to him on the podcast and listening to him on the YouTube channel, I think he and I have very similar senses of humor. I don't know. sounds like something I would have said.
No, I love Luke's sense of humor. Like he's a good vibe. I love Luke a lot. And for all those right. listening, Luke, I love you, man.
I love you, man. So let's wrap this up. Well, what main takeaways? Is there anything we haven't broached about the evening and the talk in particular that listeners need to know, which that they should take away from what the evening was like?
So now that Daniel Craig is also a former James Bond, and having met other two former Bonds, Roger and George, I never met Connery Brosnan or Dalton, unfortunately, but just go in knowing whenever Daniel will continue to be an actor and he left his place in his mark in the Bond franchise. And one of the words I'm going to quote him from the Being James Bond documentary is that it's not for him. It wasn't always about making the best movie or, you know, it has to top Doctor No. He said, I'm proud that my five films will be talked about or in the same sentence as the Doctor No, Live and Let Die, or Goldfinger. It's just a chapter within that, and that he gets to be part of that. And I bring that up because Daniel Craig gets to live his life as Daniel Craig. And unlike the other Bond, so for our future, for our listeners, and for anybody who ever plans to attend any Daniel Craig event or shows or any event that he's at, I can guarantee that Daniel Craig will never attend a Comic-Con. That's for sure.
Doesn't sound like it.
Unlike the other Bonds, Bond is really well past him. And whereas, like, when I met Sir Roger Moore, he knew that most of the people know him for Bond, that he will spend as much time talking about Bond or entertaining, or he did. He will always entertain his, you know, fans about Bond as much as possible. And George is George, as we three.
And we'll leave it at that. George is George.
Whereas Daniel is a very consummate actor, and the way he sees Bond is something that brought him a lot of, you know, like incredible. And Daniel emphasized how that he is incredibly lucky as a person and as an actor in his career to have done, because James Bond brought things from more than he could ever ask for. And that so know that, like, so that's the way Daniel views Bond, is like he sees it as a great moment of his life. And I have a clip of him saying that he said, like, you know, it was 16, 17 years of my life, and it's gonna take me another 16, 17 years to reflect on every single memory of being James Bond. But he is really focused on, you know, like, anything moving forward and, like, kind of like living on the moment, living at the moment than of the past.
A little bit surprising here. Apparently there's a third person in our chat room who wants to know if anybody in the audience asked another question. Let me just check out what's going on here. Is it Emery? No, it's not Emery. It's not Matt. No, but it's a Mr. M. White. And he wants to know that, did anybody on Friday night at the Montclair Film Festival ask, do you have people everywhere? We do have everywhere.
Well, based on our fandom community, we do have people everywhere, Edgar.
Absolutely. I mean, we're on Facebook, search for the James Bond Complex. We're on Instagram, which is mostly your pet project, search for at the James Bond Complex. We're on YouTube infrequently, but we're there. Search for the James Bond Complex, subscribe, and tickle us with a thumbs up button. Of course, there's www.thejamesbondcomplex.com, which Matt keeps asking me to not say. It's also our Tumblr account, but too late. I just did. And of course, if you're an audiophile, you don't like pictures, you can't stand pictures, you shut your eyes, but you love sound. You love the oral experience. There's anchor.fm. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Balado Diffusion Québec, whatever it's called, and my best friends in the whole wide world, Apple Podcasts. So search for the James Bond Complex, subscribe, write a review, tell us what you think about Daniel Craig, and leave a 5-star glowing Golden Gun review. If I'm not mistaken, Jason, I believe you're on Instagram as well.
My Instagram handle is JASXON88. And for the next few months, I mean, I know this year of 2022 was filled with James Bond posts and things were related to Fleming film and everything in between. But stick around. The remainder of 2022 will be posts related to Fleming film and everything in between. Mostly the Fleming the film part.
Yes. On that note, just as James Bond always returns, just so too as Daniel Craig will return, although not necessarily as James Bond, we do have some Knives Out episodes planned in the very near future. So too with the James Bond Complex, with whatever Emery put on the schedule for next Wednesday.
As well as Benoit Blanc will return as well, too.
Benoit Blanc, we will be talking. Well, as of this recording, we're recording this on Halloween, the evening of Halloween. We'll be talking about Benoit Blanc within the next few weeks, I believe. Twice, no less. Sur ce, toujours un plaisir. Merci beaucoup et à la prochaine.
들어줘서 감사합니다. 안녕히 계세요. 아리가또. 마침내.
Chance to have done it and I've had the joy and just every, I mean, it's changed my life and I will spend the next 70 years trying to unpick what happened because it's so huge. It will continue without me. It's not in the end of the day, me, you know, it'll just carry on and that's the most wonderful thing.